Dirty hands means clean theology. Can you dig it?
What is going on, all my local guys and gals? And long distance pals,
we're back.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, boy.
We're pumped tonight.
We are pumped tonight.
Caffeine is flowing.
And we're together again. We don't always get
all
to be together. It is weird when all three of us are together. It just doesn't always happen. But
we won't hear Steven fuss about being cold today.
No, the Benadryl's wearing off.
He's moved over by the wood stove.
I'm close to the stove and it feels nice.
Man from Michigan's cold all the time.
It's amazing.
Say it is.
It is. I love it.
I was booted off the island. You are the weakest link. Goodbye.
No, you just can handle the cold. I can't. I don't know what it is, but it could be them 14 years I spent in Florida, but who knows? Who knows?
Poor guy.
I know. It's been cold, though. It's supposed to be 13 tonight.
Is it?
That's what they say. They put a two-hour delay on school because it's cold.
Well, of course they do.
That is ridiculous.
Call me a grumpy old man. That makes me so mad.
That does make me mad. It's ridiculous.
I kind of remember going to school even when it was snowing.
Yeah.
Like just the dusting, we still went to school.
Barefoot, uphill both ways.
Yeah. Have to cross the river.
And I was grateful.
Yeah.
North, we really
had to paddle across the river too.
No, like, crap. Me and my buddies would actually cut trees down over back roads to try to get out of school. The bus driver would just call our parents and be like, have them walk to the end of the road, I'll pick them up.
You tried.
I'm not lying.
Cut trees down.
No,
I didn't either. That might be a bit excessive.
Wow.
True story.
I believe you.
And then still have to walk. And still have to walk in the snow.
There's nothing worse than having wet feet all day.
No.
But anyway, like I said, like you guys all said, it's good for us to be together. I'm excited. We're going to talk a little bit about something we touched on a few weeks ago. But we got some good response from it, some good feedback, and we're going to deep dive a little further into this subject. And then if there's anybody else out there that, after we talk about this, and it's some of the biblical themes in certain movies and things, if somebody has something they'd like us to look into to kind of get our interpretation of it, because really there's going to be a lot of different people, a lot of different ideas, a lot of different interpretations in these things, and that's awesome, that's fine. But if you want to hear our interpretation, feel free. Let us know what you'd like us to dive into. And there's just so many things out there, so many movies. People don't realize the presence of the supernatural and the spiritual realm in Hollywood is so much stronger than people like to let on.
Yeah. And free shout out, PJ, one of my buddies that I met in this podcasting circle, he has a show called Real, R-E-E-L, Conspiracies. And he does nothing but break down movies and the hidden symbolism and stuff behind them. And he had me on his show, and this was one of the subjects we talked about. So I had all kinds of notes and stuff on it. And, like, you know, we had talked about it a little bit. Mm-hmm. So when we were brainstorming on what to do, that's one reason I brought it up, because we had, you know, lightly touched on it once before, but it was like, I already had some cheat sheets. But if you guys like movies and like diving into that kind of stuff, check out his show.
That's awesome. I do love that, because there is so much. And it is, I mean, that's kind of what I was saying. It's so all the way through Hollywood. You see it everywhere, that the fact that you can have a whole podcast on it's not a surprise. I mean, that's not a surprise at all, because it's so rampant in so many things. So this is obviously what we'll talk about today is no different. But before we get started, why don't we say a prayer? It looks like I got nominated across the table. But dear Lord, thank you for everything you've given us. Thank you for this time together. help us remember in this December season when we talk about things like Christmas that we're focusing on you, God, that we're focusing on the fact that you sent your son. And the gift that you've given us is so beyond anything that we were ever worthy or could ever ask for. Lord, just continue to be with us, bless us, help this reach that one person who it needs to reach. Just put your words in our mouths. In your name we pray. Amen.
Amen.
Yeah, I tell you, you had some good information on this last time, but we didn't really dive all the way in. And this was, we talked a little bit about the Kong and Godzilla side of the movies there, where there is some biblical themes. And, you know, I actually was listening to what you were saying. I was like, oh, I've never really thought of that. I've never really looked at that. Never really, you know, took it that way. You know, a lot of times we watch a movie and we're just looking to be entertained. We don't see the subliminal, the things, the kind of the subconscious themes that are thrown at you right and left. And I go back and I watched a couple of these movies again, that I hadn't watched. I hadn't watched The New Empire yet. I had watched The King of Monsters recently, which is the Godzilla versus, Ghidorah.
Mm-hmm.
And that one, yeah, that one has,
your face.
That one's rife with it. But, so I went back and watched some of those things again, and it is, when you focus on that and you look at the symbolism and things in there, and your eyes are open waiting for it. It's like a veil's lifted, and all of a sudden you're like, oh my gosh, it's crazy.
Yeah. And there's some of them too, that's in your face. And then there's some of them that's kind of esoteric, that it's, if you've not read a lot of your history, and if you've not read like some of your Babylonian creation epics, and up to date on some of your, you know, Jewish mysticism and your Mesopotamian myths and lore and stuff like that, you're kind of left in the dark. So luckily for you guys, where I'm a big nerd on some of that stuff, I picked up on a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, it's cool. It really is. I don't know where you want to start, but because we can kind of look, I think we're going to focus mostly on the Kong and Godzilla side of things today. Mm-hmm.
Well, if you want, let's just, if we can go like chronologically, let's start at Skull Island.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen Skull Island?
I actually really enjoyed that. That was a very unique take on, because I don't know if you guys ever watched back in the day. My grandmother is, you know, she's one of those ones that we had the VHS, you know, recorder. And when those older movies came on, she would record them on a VHS, and we'd watch them over and over again. And one of them was the original King Kong, where they went to the original, like the old black and white Skull Island in there. And they go in and you have the big wall and they're like, you know, what are they keeping in there and all this stuff. And the little blonde girl, you know, that he catches, and they end up, the whole storyline is they capture him and bring him back to New York. And, you know, you've seen that he climbs the Empire State Building and he's, you know, holding the girl in his hand. And we've all seen that play, the airplanes flying around, you know, shooting at him and things like this. That's what I remember when we talked about this. So when I saw the new one, the whole way that was going, sorry, I didn't even realize I was doing that.
I thought it was your chin.
Apparently my cord was hitting the mic.
Ben, come to the rescue.
Thank you, Ben. You're so nice.
The tech, non-tech guy.
But when you saw that new one and the way that Samuel L. Jackson played that character, and then you saw the John C. Reilly was hilarious, as he is in most things he's in. But it was a totally fresh take on that. But to me, it's just funny to see how much different that was from the original.
See, I hadn't seen the original. I just knew that iconic clip, you know, of him hanging onto the needle and grabbing the blonde woman. So I come in with a total blank slate. Have you seen any of them, Ben?
I've seen I can't remember much of the movie, but I've seen the one. I want to say I've seen two of them, which is kind of more of the recent ones. One with Kong, King Kong, comes up, and then, I guess Goliath or whatever, right?
Godzilla.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah.
The symbolism. Yeah. It's subconscious.
Okay, so something like King Kong shows up, and Godzilla's there, and they fight each other. You know, which might have been like 2010, 15, somewhere in there. And then the one where they take King Kong, he's in Middle Earth, and he comes back because he's like got hurt or something.
That's the newest one. That's the
I've seen new them empire. Two mm-hmm. that I can remember. Mm. But I vaguely remember them. I'm pretty sure I've seen like just the Godzilla movies, but it's been so long ago.
Back with the bad dubbing where they had it was all in Japanese and you had the American words over it and they're all, blah, blah, blah. You know,
the bad dubbing.
It's so funny to watch.
I call that like a Jackie Chan where they do it on purpose.
Yeah, well, it wasn't on purpose. They just
I know. But the Jackie Chan movies, you know, some of them they. Hey, what's up?
It's like, what? Which maybe you could check this out, if the internet holds up, because I wanted to see if there was any validity, which I know Hollywood takes, you know, some liberties here, but if there was any validity at all to some of these claims. But Skull Island, it starts off in 1944 over the South Pacific Ocean, and an American fighter pilot is shot down, and he lands somewhere on this island, and this is where we first see Kong. And then later it opens back up, and this is during the war of Vietnam in 1973. And we see this guy with this Monarch briefcase claiming that he has found an uncharted island from a legend over the South Pacific called Skull Island. And that this thing even looks like a skull. And he said that this is the land where God did not finish creation. And he even described it as the Bermuda Triangle. And that it's famous for planes and ships that go missing. And this is where that plane obviously crashed in the beginning of the film in 1944. But here's what I was wanting you to check out, Steve. It says that when this guy's talking to him and trying to get funding to go check this place out that they had found, it mentions in 1954, Castle Bravo nuclear tests. And as he's mentioning it, they show this damaged ship. And it says that he believes that this was more than a test, that they were attacking something. And then it also shows a picture of this ship. And on the bow of the ship, it says USS Lawton, L-A-W-T-O-N. And then it has a newspaper that says U.S. naval ship mysteriously destroyed. Was that just completely Hollywood made up, or is there any kind of validity to that whatsoever?
Well, it says the USS Lawton was a fictional American Fletcher-class destroyer, and it's just part of the story. But if you go back to the Castle Bravo nuclear test, was a thermonuclear bomb detonation that took place on March 1st, 1954, at the Bikini Atoll in the Marshall Islands. So the bomb had a yield of 15 megatons, which is almost 1,000 times more powerful than the Hiroshima bomb. The explosion created a crater that was 6,500 feet in diameter, 250 feet deep, and it also released a radioactive cloud that contaminated over 7,000 square miles of the Pacific Ocean and nearby islands. So that is not fictional, but the ship, from what it's saying, is fictional.
Okay.
But I also think this is very important. I just wanted to point this out. in Hamilton County, Tennessee, there is a Skull Island campground. You should know that. I think it looks really cool.
Nice.
Just saying. There's a Skull Island right here.
Okay.
And a, okay. And a Rome.
There is a Rome.
Okay.
And a Paris.
And a Paris. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that comes into play later, but I wanted to check that out and I forgot to. But so he's, you know, that guy from Monarch, he's laying out his case, trying to explore this new Skull Island that they had just now discovered because they just put, you know, satellites up in the air. And like he had said, this was the place that was recently found that God had not finished creating. And he was trying to tell them, you know, the Russians and everybody else is, everyone has discovered this at the same time, and the Americans got to be the first ones and all this stuff. And they end up getting permission to go. And but the thing is, this island is surrounded by constant storms, and it's constantly hidden. And because of these storms, radio communication is cut off. So even if you get inside, you know, you cannot communicate with the outside world. And they end up hitching a ride with this ship, and they form their team. But what I think's kind of crazy is they're on the boats and they're on their way. They're approaching this island. There's this big storm cloud going around. It's, you know, thunder, lightning, and all this stuff. Looks like a huge tornado. And the song choice, you know, they always have these songs going on, and they're playing Break On Through the Other Side. And that's a song by Jim Morrison. And for those that don't know, Jim Morrison was a very known occultist. And this song is about the astral realm. And it's about taking drugs and breaking through to the other side, to the astral realm, to talk to other entities on the other side. And that's what they're doing in this film symbolically. They are punching through and breaking through to the other side.
That is trippy. It is trippy. And the doors,
And then the second song choice as they're approaching is, and this is when they're on the boat ride, it's Down on the Street by the Stooges. Now, that's not really like a mystic song, but the section of the song they chose that kept repeating was No Walls. It kept saying, No Walls, No Walls, No Walls. So I just thought that was kind of funny that they chose that repeating lyric after the Jim Morrison reference to Breaking Through the Other Side, No Walls, No Walls. But they roll through this cloud, they punch through, and they start dropping bombs. And they say to, kind of like sonar, they're going to drop all these bombs and all the vibrations it makes. Mm-hmm. They're going to map this island. That's the fastest and best way to map this place. And as soon as they do, the first readings they get back, the scientist says, hey, you're not going to believe this. It's hollow. It's hollow as can be. And that comes across the radio. And as soon as he says that, you hear some guy say, oh my God, boom.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when the proverbial excrement hits the fan. That's when Kong shows up and just starts destroying everything.
Hey guys, this is Steve from the Dig Bible Podcast. I really hope you guys are enjoying the content, but also the sound quality. It's drastically improved since I handed that duty over to the Handcrafted Audio. If you've enjoyed the quality of the show and have any audio or editing needs, reach out to Jason at thehandcraftedaudio@gmail.com. And as always, keep digging.
And he basically kills everybody except for like a small handful that survive. And then, of course, it's like two of the guys from Monarch, and the guy that got the funding and the approval was one of them, and Samuel L. Jackson, the hardened veteran. And that's when the guy from Monarch lays out the plot line. He was like, yeah, I was on that ship. I was a part of that Castle Bravo mission, and we seen this thing. And that's what we were bombing and nuking and trying to kill. I was the only survivor. Nobody believed me. And I had to come back here and get document and proof and evidence. And now we have
kind to of clear his name.
Yes,
kind
and
of
now thing. We have to get out of here and show the world the proof and kill this monster before it kills us. And there's more of these things. And, you know, and that's what it was all over. And then Samuel L. Jackson was like, so we weren't mapping anything. We were calling this thing out. And so then the rest of the movie, they're trying to escape this island. But, of course, Samuel L. Jackson is now.
He just wants to kill it.
Yes, he's the battle-hardened veteran that just lost a lot of his men, and he wants revenge. Right,
yeah.
They keep doing flashbacks with him, too, to all these different things that happened in his life that got him to where he is. But he goes nuts. He loses it. Mm-hmm. I mean, he totally loses it in this revenge plot going back at Kong here.
And one thing I thought was wild too was when they roll up in that storm was kind of like a time travel type thing, kind of like that flight to Malaysia. And like that Netflix show Manifest. And for those that's not familiar with that, this plane takes off and it goes through this storm and it just disappears, just like that flight to Malaysia.
Mm-hmm. Kind of sounds like that movie Final Countdown too.
Yeah.
Where it's I think it's a modern day airplane, like a F-14 or something, whatever it is. And he flies through a storm and he's back at Hawaii when Pearl Harbor was happening.
Mm-hmm.
There was
it was something to that effect.
So those stories, this is random. Sorry, this is off the movie topic. But if you look up, there's a story about a guy and they never figured out how this happened, but he was over somewhere in the Atlantic, down that way around the Bermuda Triangle. And he was flying from one of those smaller islands to Miami. And the trip was supposed to take, I can't remember exact time. It was supposed to take like 2 hours or something. So he radios, you know, when he's takeoff, and he says he flies up and he goes into these clouds and then he sees a tunnel through the clouds. And this is all actual documented real thing that happened. He sees like a tunnel through the clouds and he goes through. It's the only place it's clear. And he says it's, and I can't remember how he described everything, but he said it was really trippy. You go through this thing. And he said, all of a sudden he's coming into Miami. And they said he got there in like 15 minutes and it's supposed to take 2 hours with this little single prop plane he had. And no one could ever, they said they have his takeoff time and they have his landing time and no one can explain how he got from here to there like that. And that's a true story.
Mm.
So it's the same kind of, there's some very supernatural things that happen. Between with the space and time when it comes to those type of things, but I just think that's
they say that about
I think that's the source of the
Bermuda
story.
Triangle. All kinds of crazy weird stuff happens,
and that Netflix show is that they thought it crashed and they just couldn't find the body or the black box, like the flight to Malaysia.
Mm-hmm.
And 10 years go by, and then one day the plane just lands. And the people inside the plane don't know any different. They get off the plane and 10 years have went by and they're like, they have no idea. And they try to go back to their normal lives, and that the series follows their lives.
It sounds almost kind of like that Lost show.
And then that movie, Indiana Jones, the new one, The Dial of Destiny, they find this Spear of Destiny, but inside of it is a key and it's a piece to this machine that I can't remember the ancient guy's name, but he made a time machine, and that was the missing piece. And what it was is when you put that thing together, it gave coordinates.
Da Vinci? Was he talking about Da Vinci?
It wasn't Da Vinci, but somebody like him. Mm-hmm.
This is back in like Alexander the Great kind of time frame, I think.
Like Socrates' time.
It was Socrates.
Something I like think. That. Diogenes or something.
The Socrates sounds
but
right.
In a way, it give you coordinates. But the coordinates they found out was a storm. And so when you flew through that storm, it was an electromagnetic anomaly that when you flew through it, it took you to a different time. And you set the dial to what time you wanted to go to. And when you flew through that, it took you to it.
But it didn't.
So, but it malfunctioned in right. the movie.
Well.
But that was yeah. the thing was you have all these different, you know, similarities with this, and that's kind of
going
what it looked like
storm
in that
kinda,
show.
Yeah.
When I seen that, that's what reminded me of that. Hmm. But, and that's, and you meet that guy from the beginning of the movie. But at the beginning of the film, you have this army fighter pilot crash. Well, while they're trying to escape the island, they have this group of natives surround them. They think they're going to murder them. But then here out comes this American dressed up in his, you know,
military
fatigues or whatever. And he's like, hey, you know, I'm not the only one now. Welcome to the party. No, they're cool guys, you know, or whatever. And it's him. And he tells them the story, you know, that Kong is basically the protector of the island, and that, you know, when they showed up dropping bombs, he pissed them off and catches them all up on the story and stuff. But it's pretty wild, and he tells them the best way to get off the island, but tells them this ancient story of the culture and how there was a whole race of these ape people, and they were the protectors of the realm. But there's these demonic creatures that he called the skull, what do you call them? The skull crushers or skull creepers or walkers, something like that. I can't remember now, but that they would come up and kill the people, and that the Kongs protected them.
Mm-hmm.
And that they,
isn't that kind of something that happens in that modern one, the newest one?
Oh, we'll get there.
Yeah, we'll get
there.
Yeah.
And so that's, but they killed all the Kongs, and he was the only one left. But there was one big one, and that he was afraid that all those bombs would have woke the big one up. And if the big one wakes up, they're in trouble because Kong is not fully grown yet. And sure enough, the big one gets woke up.
And then they're fighting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to go back a little bit when you were talking about it. I just find that as a unique similarity because they show this multiple times. We'll see some of it in the other movies in different ways. But when you talked about the Jim Morrison break on through to the other side, you know, and No Walls and talking about that, I think it's interesting when you look, it's a storm. It's a big lightning storm around the island. And every time, if we look at biblically and we see lightning, you know, we actually think about Satan because, you know, I saw Satan fall like lightning, or the devil fall like lightning from heaven. Saw Satan fall like lightning from heaven. I think that was, it's Luke 10:18. Mm-hmm. And when you think about breaking through to the other side, you're going through that lightning, you're seeing that you're going to the other side of this and you're going through what we're, you know, metaphorically seeing as something that usually refers to Satan. So you're seeing that when you do break onto the other side, it's into something more demonic. It's something more evil. And I think that's a unique, I hadn't thought about that with that one until you said those things, but it makes a lot of sense to me because you see throughout the rest of these movies, the antagonist, you know, the enemy usually is surrounded with lightning or has lightning as part of that creature's weaponry or comes with those creatures. You'll see lightning storms associated with them throughout these movies. And that's usually the demonic or the one that would refer to who Satan was in these films. And I think that that's just another interesting way when you talk about breaking on through the other side, because we see this right now. We've talked about that mind altering drugs and what, especially DMT, you know, people doing ayahuasca, things like that, that are breaking through into a different plane. And they're showing now with medical, scientific research, supposedly, where they're injecting people with a therapeutic dose of this through an IV, where they're going in and they're all seeing the same things. They're seeing the same entities. They are actually, having a, they have the same names for these entities when they come out, and these people have never talked to each other. So I think that this stuff has been well known for a long time in those circles, but it's starting to become mainstream and starting to become more and more accepted, because now you can pay to go under with DMT and held in a therapeutic state as long as you're willing to pay.
Yeah, and you can even in North Carolina.
Going on these trips. I know it, I think it started out in, I think it was Colorado when they first, they were the first ones, I think, that legalized hallucinogens. I think it was out there. And it's very scary because you're going into a supernatural thing that we're told to scripturally not to do. Very, very specifically.
Easily crash and burn. And what's crazy is I forgot, and I was looking over my notes here, when they're punching through to the other side in that movie, the military leader is in a helicopter, and that helicopter's name in the film is called the Griffin, which is symbolic, you know, in Freemasonry, the Griffin, the Phoenix. And as they're going through, the captain is telling them the Greek story of Icarus. He said, who his father gave him wings, and he flew too close to the sun, melting his wings, and he fell into the sea. And as he's telling the story at the end is when they finally punch through.
Jeez. That's terrifying.
So it's like even they were aware of the symbolism of the music and the visualizations as they were doing it.
Just makes you wonder how, I mean, it's obvious how corrupt Hollywood and everything is already anyways.
I think the difference is now, and it's we're seeing it in these films, and I think this is something we can talk about as a whole with this, and we'll keep going, but it's a slow subconscious indoctrination to get to a point where we think of these things as normal, where we think of these things as okay. And it starts with entertainment, and it slowly just becomes something that, you know, we talk about the frog, right, in the boiling water. You throw it right in the boiling water, it jumps out. But if you slowly heat that water up, frog just boils to death. Mm. And that's where we're at, where this stuff is slowly getting pushed on us more and more and more and more. And if you don't have eyes to see or ears to hear, it sneaks up on you.
And the whole fallen angel, you know, the golden age and the return,
mm-hmm.
is so clear, because, and I'm so glad that I looked back, because I'd have totally skipped over this in my notes. When that guy from Monarch is telling him that he was the last survivor and everything, he said plainly in there, as he's telling him all that stuff, he said he was the only survivor. He said, "This planet doesn't belong to us. An ancient species on this earth long before mankind. If we keep our heads buried in the sand, they will take it back." He said his organization specializes in finding massive, unidentified terrestrial organisms. He said now that they have the proof, they need to go home and send the cavalry. This planet doesn't belong to us. Ancient species on this earth long before mankind.
Here comes your gap theory. Here comes your a lot of that symbolism that pulls into that. That is intense, but it really makes you think. To me, you know, we hear about Return to the Golden Age and things of this where, you know, we're trying to, not us, not saying us, don't get me wrong here, but the idea that, you know, at some point these fallen angels, these entities will return. And that's just kind of a precursor to that. If we see that, you know, it's the world's ramping up and starting to go that direction.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and when that guy was telling the history of the people, that those people, they called themselves the Iwis. Mm-hmm. But how the Iwis described those monsters that they were in fear of, they were reptilian. They lived in fear of reptilian creatures that devastated the land and ate the people until the large gorilla race people showed up and protected them and became the benefactors of man and kept the reptilians under the ground. They pushed them under the ground.
So are they now in this, are we looking at Kong and the other who would have been the apes at that time prior to this? Because obviously he's the last one. Are we looking at it as those are the, is it the angels versus demons story here? Is that how we're viewing
that's how they're portraying it. Hmm. Is that they are the good guys that pushed the bad ones under the ground.
Hmm.
The benefactors of man keeping the peace, the benefactors of man and pushing the bad reptilian race into Tartarus is the symbolism that they're taking here. That's pretty much it.
For, well, I was gonna say, for
the Skull Island.
There's one. And I know, I'm sure we missed a ton of things. And like I said, if anybody out there has anything that they want to incorporate or say, or
that's,
you know,
pretty much the overall arching, you know,
but reach out, let us know. I mean, feel free to jump on the Dig Facebook page. Let us know what you guys think.
You ready to go to Godzilla?
I'm listening.
2014. But that one, it starts off showing an old film from the World War era, showing Godzilla in the ocean, and they fire a nuke at it, and then it fades into the Philippines, 1999, and 1999 to open the film. And then we see a Monarch helicopter flying by, but they land in a mine where they report finding a large pocket of radiation. And they thought they might have found some plutonium, so they dug into this site. And but as they dug in, the ground just caved in, and they found a huge sinkhole. So they go inside, but they find a large skeleton fossil instead. And one scientist asks the Monarch guy, is this him? And he says, no, this is much more ancient. And inside they find a preserved egg hanging from the ceiling, but one has been broken. And then they reveal a large trail coming from the ground straight into the ocean. And they have this American engineer in Japan who's working at this nuclear reactor site. And he's talking on the phone about all these tremors that's been going on and about how they need to shut this plant down. And he's looking at these paperwork and all this stuff, and he's noticing patterns of earthquakes and tremors. And he's telling the guy on the phone that this is, you know, not random earthquakes, that this is like a set pattern, and that the nuclear power plant is in danger. And it fast forwards like 15 years, and this plant has been destroyed, but the engineer survived, but he lost his wife in this accident. And this same engineer has been arrested for trespassing, and his son has to go and pick him up. So the dad basically believes that something nefarious happened that day, and basically the government is trying to hide it, and he's investigating.
Government would never hide anything.
Yeah. No, they're here for our best interests.
Yeah.
All of us.
Everyone.
Yeah. Every interest. Good or bad.
And for those that've seen the movie, you know I covered a lot of ground very fast right there. But that's basically just saying that the Monarch guys found basically some kind of prehistoric egg that hatched, basically funneled its way to a nuclear site and caused it to collapse. And this guy seen something abnormal, tried to report it. They didn't listen. It blew up. He lost his wife and everything else, and knew something was up, but everybody kept saying, it was just an earthquake. It was just, freak accident. Don't worry about it. Look the other way. And he refused and keeps digging and digging and digging. And now he thinks he's found something, and he's went into this quarantine zone to try to prove it and got arrested. And he keeps telling his son, and everybody thinks he's crazy. He's a conspiracy theorist. Well, he finally convinces his son that there might be something to it. So he actually gets his son to go with him and finds the paperwork to show that, that it was a set pattern and all this stuff. And then they go back, and then they basically, he takes that little, the radiation thing. And it should be spiking off the charts, but it's not. He takes his mask off and he's breathing. And then lo and behold, they see people and all kinds of stuff going on at that old site at the nuclear reactor. But, he just got arrested the day before and they get picked up again. But the reactor starts going off, tremors start happening again, and they get brought back to the thing. Well, turns out that thing went to that site and started feeding off of that nuclear reactor, and they just left it alone just to see what it would do. And it's been feeding off of this thing this whole time, and now it's starting to hatch. And the government was just trying to keep it hush-hush just to see what it would do, because they didn't know. They just, in the eyes of science, they just wanted to see what this thing would do. And this whole time I was thinking, this is Godzilla, or whatever. But it turns out that this wasn't Godzilla. This was something else. But when it hatches, that's like when Godzilla shows up. Because this thing, basically it's kind of like a predatory type thing. Like there can only be one, the Highlander. When one of these things shows up,
there can be only one. I don't know if I've seen that one, but I kind of vaguely remember, But it's like Godzilla kind of knows, hey, there's something that's got my same kind of power.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They show in this, and it is another kind of a supernatural thing, right? Because in all these movies, they could be on opposite side of the world, and they can sense where each other are.
Right.
So you'll see, like, Godzilla, all of a sudden, he's like, nope, I'm going this way, and he starts working his way around the globe because he knows there's something here. He can sense there's something there. And this is how some of these fights take place. And we find out later, which they call these things Titans.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
right.
No,
yeah.
No fun as they're playing on that word. But they call these things Titans, and things that are ancient, things that were here before us, things that, and there's even quotes talking about how they are going to, restore balance.
Well, see, that's later.
Ooh, I know. I'm sorry. I'm getting ahead of myself, but.
Well, see, that's the thing. And I guess we'll just kind of go quickly through this one to get to the good stuff. But basically for Godzilla, it's like, this is where you first get introduced to him, because this one hatches and then Godzilla shows up for the first time and they start fighting. And so the government starts trying to nuke him, trying to kill him, but it just feeds him. It makes him stronger. And of course, he's trying to fight this other monster. And this monster goes to this other egg and then hatches it. And it turns out to be a male and a female. Then they breed, start making eggs.
Yeah.
And then they basically realize that he's been laying under the sea, dormant, sleeping all this time. He didn't come up till this one did. So maybe after he kills it, he'll go back to sleep. And once they realize that, he kills those, and he does. He goes back to the ocean to sleep. So it's like, okay, well, he's, like Steve was saying, he just restores balance. He's here to keep the checks and balances. And then they was like, oh, well, these other monsters, well, they're just called Titans or whatever. And then they find that there's bunches of them all over the world, but they're laying dormant and asleep, and Godzilla's basically the king.
He's the alpha.
In that movie, in Godzilla, he is dubbed at the end the king of the monsters.
Yeah. But in this movie here, it establishes him. And you find out that that's why he's way at the bottom of the oceans, because of all the magma, all the radiation of the core of our Earth that charges him. But it takes forever, thousands or millions of years for him to charge. But gap theory, billions of years ago, these things were running around everywhere and there was a huge battle and he defeated them all. And now humanity's taken over the Earth. But now when you go into that, then here you get to the good one, the Godzilla, the king of the Titans.
Or king of the monsters.
Yeah, king of the monsters. And now, go ahead, Steve, take it away.
Now, this one, to me, this is the one that, to me, kind of sets this off even more. What Justin's kind of, alluded to these movies, it's kind of ramped up, right? You're getting a couple different takes on it through different directors, but there's always this supernatural theme throughout these things. And in King of the Monsters, this is where it gets, to me, is crazy symbolic. But Ghidorah is the main enemy, which is funny because if you look at the beginning of this, Godzilla senses something's happening. And so he starts shooting across and going to different, he's trying to get to, it ends up being, I think it's, is it Antarctica? I think is where they're going, is Antarctica.
Well, even start off like, because where we've laid all that out with Godzilla and the Titans about the mother in San Francisco, alpha frequency. I mean, lay all that out.
Well, so that this part is what, I guess, where we see the true human nature come out, right? Because they get to a point, we're talking about this small group monarch has this mother has kind of figured that out where she can awaken or supposedly control one of these monsters. And now that right there, when we start thinking that we can control, and I think a lot of people, if you take the symbolism into this world, when we talk about just what we talked about, breaking on through to the other side, thinking you can control the demonic realm, thinking you can let something in and you can control those things that are around you. Exactly. We think we have this control over those things, which are so much more powerful than us, but yet we continue to make those mistakes. Our culture can, I'm talking real life, continue to make these mistakes, but she has this little machine, for lack of a better word, it's kind of like a handheld kind of laptop type thing that can kick out that frequency. And so what they do we find out Godzilla is working his way towards this creature, but they're trying to, they have this Ghidorah, which is a three-headed dragon, which they call a Hydra, but they have this thing frozen in ice in Antarctica. And they actually go and they're because they think they can control this. And the whole thing is too, they're going to go around and awake these things one at a time. They know where these things are all over the planet. That's what she's saying. So they were going to release them one at a time. But what happened is they release this Hydra, this three-headed dragon. They explode this ice. And then she plays this frequency. The thing comes to life.
Well, what happened though, the lead up to that was she worked for Monarch and she made that computer and she developed what was called an alpha frequency. And like you said, to control them, but she done it without Monarch knowing. And she done it because kind of like Greta Thunberg, and the humans were destroying the earth, mm-hmm. and that humans needed to be eliminated, balance needed to be restored, and that if the Titans would be awakened, that they would kill all humanity and restore balance to the earth. That was her plan. But like you said, just one at a time was the plan. But yeah.
The other part is they when they talk about Ghidorah and they explain it, they say the Hydra whose storm swallowed both gods and men alike. And we go back to that storm. Cause whenever later on, when we see, Ghidorah, whenever it comes, these lightning storms, it's shrouded with these lightning storms. When it breathes, it shoots lightning. So we see that reference back to Satan as, with the lightning reference, we see it very strong here. I think as we go along, we see Godzilla fights Ghidorah pretty early in that movie. And the first thing that happens is Godzilla actually rips one of Ghidorah's heads off. Now, what happens is Ghidorah actually regenerates that head, this so-called, you could have said, mortal wound, and redevelops this head. It regenerates. When this, they called them kaiju, which are the other titans, the other monsters. When this happens, Ghidorah goes up and basically makes this like beckoning call. And these monsters, Rodan shows up first, which is this large kind of bat dragon looking thing with a couple of horns coming off it. And it comes and you start seeing these things
like
show
a phoenix, fiery bird.
And it starts and they all bow down to Ghidorah. And so if we look at this, so after it regenerates, after it shows that it healed, it's healed from this mortal wound, all these major other entities are bowing down to it, which takes me into
a cross. Yes,
the cross is right in the foreground of that picture, right in the front. This is happening behind. There is a cross right in the front of that picture. And it is, I mean, this is Revelation 13:3. Right? It says, I saw that one of the heads of the beast seemed wounded beyond recovery, but the fatal wound was healed. The whole world marveled at this miracle and gave allegiance to the beast.
And it showed all the television screens, all showing that in the foreground was that cross, mm-hmm. and all the beasts bowing and all the television
That's
screens.
That's insane.
Everyone's marveling at that. I mean, this is exact to Revelation.
I was wondering if anybody else caught that. Yeah.
That's exact. That one blew me away. But like I said, whenever you see him, when Ghidorah's there, there's lightning. Everything comes in this lightning. You see that same reference I saw, you know, Luke, I think it was Luke 18:10. So yes, he told them, I saw Satan fall from heaven like lightning. We see that lightning reference back to Satan again.
But all those titans, of course, they come from the underground. Mm-hmm. So, of course, the fallen angels thrown down in
Tartarus. That's what I was about to say.
Mm-hmm. It's exactly that. And then it takes us a little bit farther. We see Godzilla, and I'm trying to... So, I watched this one earlier today, and I'm already getting messed up because I watched the New Empire yesterday. So I'm trying not to get mixed up in what I'm talking about. But Godzilla actually dies in this from an oxygen depletion bomb or something like that? I can't remember what they called it. But he's actually killed. I can't remember if that was exactly mm-hmm. how, but he's actually killed. And one of the scientists, that wannabe guy, goes, go ahead.
Yeah. Before you get there, because that's toward the end. Where's it at? Okay. Before she plays the alpha frequency, the daughter actually warns her mother, and she actually uses the phrase, you know, warns her about playing quote unquote God, about using the alpha frequency and causing devastation to the entire planet. And when she does this, it shows this like screen with monarchs holding facilities with these titans. And it shows it like in cut screens several times. I had to pause and play several times to catch all these. And because it's not something they just come right out and tell you. And this is going to blow your guys' mind. Okay. He's told that there's, when they ask about how many titans there are, because the terrorist asks how many there are. And he says that there's 17 and counting after Godzilla. And I said to myself, I'm willing to bet there's 20. Just like the chiefs of the fallen watchers that descended upon Mount Hermon, according to the book of Enoch. So, while scrolling on the iPad, I paused back and forth, and here's the names that I got on that screen. Masura, and that was in China. Rodan, Isla de Mara, Gorgura, and that's Godzilla, Bermuda Triangle. Methuselah, Germany, according to the map. Skisala, Arizona. Behemoth, Rio de Janeiro. Kong, Skull Island. He then scrolls to the map. Leviathan, Scotland. Amhuluka, Russia. Baphomet, Morocco. Sekhmet, the cat goddess of Egypt. Mekele Meribi, Sudan. Typhon, Cambodia. Vamata no Rochi, Japan. Bun Yip, Australia. Tiamat, Stone Mountain. Abaddon, Wyoming. Quetzalcoatl, Machu Picchu, Peru. Now, their response to his surprise at this count was, most of them are in hibernation. To the others have been contained. Notice all of the names. Most of them are gods. The guy that took the woman and her child captive is an eco-terrorist. Climate change nutbag is what I said in my notes here. Wants humanity wiped out to restore natural order. But I put down here in my notes, where was it at? Because I'm trying to think, because when I counted here, it was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19 with Monster Zero. Oh, and then I said, I can't find it in my notes, but I said, what if herself, the woman, was the 20th herself, being Inanna, the spirit of Inanna who descended in the epic into Tartarus. But it said, her daughter looks at her mother after all that, shows all those screens when she says she warns her about playing God. It says her daughter looks at her mother and says, you're a monster. It says, then it hit me, number 20, the Lilith demon, Inanna, who opened the gates to the underworld in the Mesopotamian legends.
It fits. That's crazy. That does fit.
Okay, pick back up where you's at.
He's so lost.
I'm I tell you, is
the mortal head wound. It was just
I was talking about Godzilla when he actually dies. He dies at one point.
Yes.
Ken Watanabe, I can't remember what his character is. He's one of the science guys, and he actually ends up having to give his life up, but it brings back Godzilla. Godzilla is resurrected, right? We see the resurrection and to be everybody's savior, right? So you see
he has to sacrifice himself. Yeah,
he has to sacrifice himself, but Godzilla comes back as everyone's savior. That's the broad stroke of it. The cool part, which when we talk about when we talk about the end of time, right? When it says that God will destroy the earth with what?
Fire.
With fire. When Godzilla comes back and he's coming towards Ghidorah at the end of this, right? Godzilla, it says that he has changed. It shows that he has changed. Instead of being the blue that you always see, he's now red. And he is everything. Fire's coming with him. Everything he walks by, he touches. The buildings are starting on fire and things are melting just by being around him. He comes back with fire to destroy Ghidorah, Satan. You have that same end of time battle. They're showing this end of the world battle, this revelation battle right there in front of you.
That's crazy.
So you have him coming with fire. He's burning. He's melting all these buildings. And it's, what is it? You know, Isaiah is a good one. Isaiah 66:15 says, see, the Lord is coming with fire. His swift chariots roar like a whirlwind. He will bring punishment with the fury of his anger and the flaming fire of his hot rebuke. I mean, Godzilla was coming back for to finish it, right? And I'm going through this a lot faster than you are. You are pulling out a lot more things than I have. So if I skip over anything, because I'm getting close to the end of this movie here, and there's a couple of things that I'm just overall viewpoints of the movie here too. But at the end of the film, you see right then Godzilla defeats Ghidorah, and what happens? Do you remember what happens? All those other, they called them kaiju, but all those other monsters, those other titans come around Kong, or not Kong, I'm sorry, Godzilla, and all bow to him. And once again, Isaiah 45:23, Romans 14:11, I've sworn by my own name, I have spoken the truth. I will never go back on my word. Every knee will bend to me and every tongue will declare allegiance to me. At the end, when all this happens, you know, we always hear that in church, you know, at the end, doesn't matter what you think right now, at the end, every tongue will confess, every knee will bow. At the end, Godzilla had saved everybody, all these other titans, everybody came and just boom. Yep. You're the king. That's it. It was like a transfer of power. You had Ghidorah, who was the king of this world. And Jesus said, Jesus. And Godzilla comes back, you know, after he's resurrected, comes back at the end of the movie, at the end of time, to destroy Ghidorah and reclaim what's his. This is the exact biblical narrative that we hear. This is what Revelations is all about. Kind of interesting how that, I mean, it's very, this movie was so blatant with this. One of the scientists said at one point in here, and this is kind of going back to what you had talked about before, talking about the golden age a little bit. And so one of the scientists says, myth is our compass. So stories about monsters and dragons could help us find the titans and restore our connection to nature. This is a you know, this is going back more towards the beginning of what we're talking about when they're trying to release these things. When she's talking about releasing these things, they think this is the answer is to bring this back, to bring that golden age back. To me, this is looking at First Enoch, kind of that whole play. This is looking at Genesis 6, right? Seeing that where the gods are now coming back, reclaiming and kind of perfecting. We can go back to the Sumerian myth, Mesopotamian myth, about how the gods are there to protect and bring knowledge and be there for us. They're the ones that are supposed to guide us. And we see right here, this is the idea, still the thought at this point in time. But then you obviously see what happens. And then I did have that little section at the end. I said the cross at the coronation of Ghidorah, that basically when he's claiming he's king, right? We see the cross in the foreground as a foreshadowing of what's to come. Godzilla dies. The cross is there. Jesus, you know, died for us. And Satan's looking down at the cross like, you know,
got him.
I won. Yep. Got him. And that's what Ghidorah, that's what's happening. Ghidorah's like, this is it. I'm going to win. I've won. But they showed that cross ever so. I mean, it's huge. It's half the screen in front of Ghidorah, who's on a hill in the back and doing his thing where he's yelling for all those other things.
It's on fire. It's a volcano.
Yes. And he is claiming to be king. He's claiming to be the alpha, as we said in that, you know, the alpha frequency. And then all these creatures at the end turn around in the other way. But it's Satan claiming victory as he looked upon Jesus being crucified. I mean, that's like a very blatant, I've said that a bunch of times, but just a very straight way of looking at it, which I thought was very, very crazy. But
mm-hmm. Yep. And I had that in there too. That Chinese scientist, you know, looks at that dad and says, you know, myth is our compass. Mm. And he asks her, you know, if they had any stories on how to slay dragons. And she tells him, you know, that's a Western concept. You know, in the East, dragons are sacred, divine creatures that brought wisdom, strength, and redemption. And that she finds a story that fits the bill for Monster Zero. A great dragon, listen to this, that fell from the stars. Mm-hmm. A hydra whose storm swallowed both men and gods alike. And the dad says, an alien. And the scientist says, a false king. And then another scientist says, that explains why the other titans are responding like they are. It's almost like he's reshaping the planet in his own liking.
Or likeness.
Exactly. Satan remaking things in his own image, his own likeness. The legends she finds calls him Ghidorah. The one who is many. I think of Legion. We are many. The monsters are destroying the world, and then the military is trying to lure them with the nukes. And the last one, it says, you know, of course, they weren't responding because they were getting smarter. They were starting to listen to the alpha. And, but yeah, like you had said, the whole imagery, it's all there. And the scientist sacrifices himself and dies to save the savior of the world. And at the end, every knee shall bow. I mean, it's all there.
That whole thing when you said that about the fell from space alien, it's the same thing again, that same imagery. I saw Satan fall like from heaven, like lightning. He came from above and came down. He's a man. It's just, the imagery is very, very, in your face. The other part I thought, and I guess I jumped over this, but when she, you know, she thinks she's in control, right, with that alpha frequency that she's using with that laptop. And when she does that, she basically is able to turn this creature on, for lack of a better word, and those guys are up there trying to turn that off, right? They have the two guys that are the good guys, per se, are up in this control room, and they're locked out, and they spill, I think it's like some kind of liquor on the keyboard to get it to short out, so then that keyboard stops working. And all of a sudden, when all those other Titans start showing up, that guy standing next to the scientist, the girl who did it, mm-hmm. and he's like, I thought we were going to release them one at a time, right? That's what you'd said before. And he's like, but they're all showing up. She goes, I'm not doing this. She lost control. She thought she had control, but she lost control because you cannot control the demonic realm. You cannot control that side of things. Mm-hmm. So it's just such a, I mean, you would think that this one, you would think was written by a Christian person. Some of the other, and when we get into the next one, there's some stuff that is a little, you know, in some of these, I see it as glorifying the Titans more. And those other, what we would call maybe potentially fallen angels, or maybe they're trying to show them as other angels. It just depends on the imagery and how you kind of look at this. But this one, it just seems like a very straightforward story of Jesus and Satan. Like a very straightforward image of that. But that's just my take on it, I guess.
Now, which one are you talking about there?
The King of the Monsters is what I'm talking about. The one we're still talking about. Now, if you got anything else on that one?
No, that's it. Now, the biblical themes is kind of like a Satan and fallen angels versus angels. And kind of like Kong and Skull Island, how he's confined to Skull Island, kind of like either heaven and Eden, like Skull Island's kind of like Eden or the angelic realm, and he's kind of held off to it. And Satan, you know, given dominion of Earth, you know, he is the god of this mm-hmm. of this world, and they're trying to keep Kong away from him in Earth, because if he gets out, they're going to fight, and they're trying to keep him separate, you know, this whole time. But he's outgrowing his cage, basically, and they're trying to get him to Middle Earth, and they end up like moving him, and of course Zilla picks up on him, and they end up fighting a couple times, and end up eventually getting him to Middle Earth, and they end up
Hollow Earth, right? Is it that?
Hollow Earth. And they end up battling a few times. Of course, I was always rooting for Kong. I was always a Kong guy. But it's like the first time they fought, Kong was heavily sedated and chained on a ship, and there's Zilla in his element in the water. And here's a highly sedated gorilla chained on a boat. Of course, he's going to lose. But when they were on land, you know, Kong won. So it was kind of like a draw, basically, in the end. So they basically just said that it was a draw, and Zilla was the king of Earth, and Kong was the king of Middle Earth.
And it's so that is the part where the New Empire one, when you get further down there, and I have a little bit on this.
We can go into that one if you're ready.
Yeah, we can jump in there. We can go into that a little bit. There's a couple of main themes that I caught in there that I thought were interesting. And I'm sure you have a lot more, but the main gist of this is that Hollow Earth, and still that Kong versus Godzilla thing, which to me is interesting because the way the theme they end on is so much different, right? The way it starts is, this is where I struggle a little bit with, whereas the King of Monsters is very like right along the biblical narrative. This other one, this New Empire has some of those same key notes, but they change throughout the film, right? Because you still have Godzilla and Kong going at each other. Whereas you could say, you know, you feel like...
And you find the 20th fallen angel in this one. How I said maybe Inanna, you know, in the other one, but you actually have a 20th
yep.
one that pops up here.
Yeah. But this is interesting, though, because the way you see this at the beginning, right, you have, once again, like you said, Godzilla's here on Earth, which I think it's funny, he sleeps in the Colosseum, right, in Rome. But yeah. you had, which I just thought that was funny. I don't know why that was so funny, but then you have, Kong is still in, the Hollow Earth, whatever, but they show that there's portals that take you from one side to the other and people are controlling these portals.
Yeah, they're guarding them. Kind
well, of they thing. Guard them, but they can turn them on or off because they set up this electrical current around it when they went right. through with Kong.
Okay. Yeah.
So they're able to kind of, not that those
the first one now in the, what was it? Godzilla versus Kong. They only knew of one
mm-hmm.
and it was in Antarctica, but the only time they tried to use it, the guy died. And then it was some guy that come up with some kind of great invention, kind of like Elon Musk, come up with some kind of great invention craft that could actually get through there and do it, which we kind of skipped over. But in the Godzilla versus Kong, that guy took the head of Ghidorah.
Oh,
and
Mecha Godzilla.
And made a machine Godzilla and used the brain of Ghidorah
mm-hmm.
to like Meta and put a helmet on a person and sync up to it like a
Neuralink
to hook up to this mechanical Godzilla because they were saying Godzilla was, you know, not reliable. So therefore humanity was going
to make their own robo
Godzilla yeah. that we could control. And what happened was, is basically what Christians are so afraid of now is that the ghost in the machine took over and basically Ghidorah
reincarnated
and took over the mechanical Godzilla, and Kong and Zilla had to team up to beat Ghidorah incarnated in this Mecha Godzilla.
Yeah. Yeah.
I forgot about that.
I did, you know, I did too. And like I said, I watched that the other day too. But we
see that they discovered, I guess, how to
travel through that,
manipulate other,
those wormholes.
Yeah.
But they show it. Cause as you go through the movie, you'll see, they look up and like those apes, they look up and see different ways into those, like the Iwi realm and stuff like that, where they're once again, kind of behind a shroud, but it's a different shroud. You know, it's not like the island that's in the lightning and the storm that's hidden there. They're hidden inside of this, like, cocoon type thing.
Yeah. Because the first movie, Skull Island, those Iwis that we talked about, the indigenous people from Skull Island that was there living with Godzilla, and those people from that time to now are all dead. There's only one survivor, and it's a little girl, and she's deaf. But the story is that a huge storm came through and killed them all, and that girl was the only survivor. But we find out through the movie that a wormhole opened up and sucked them all into Middle mm-hmm. Earth, and that's where they're all living now. But everybody on Earth thinks that they just got wiped out by this storm.
By the way, spoiler alert if you haven't seen it yet.
Yeah.
That one's the newest. That was this year. But yeah, that's exactly it. Like, it's pretty interesting too. And those people, when they're waiting for a chosen one, a chosen Iwi to come that would be able to release yet another Titan, Mothra. And Mothra is another one of those ones that has been around in the black and white movie. It was in the old Godzilla movies. Mothra has been around forever.
She's like queen of the monsters, right?
I think they may have called her that at some point. I'm not 100% sure, but you're probably right. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting because we go through this and the same thing. It's kind of the same way to a degree with Kong. You know, he thinks all his people are gone. Mm-hmm. Right. But he gets down, they're in this hollow earth, but yet there's an earthquake type thing from, this seismic activity that opens up a cavern into an unknown part,
a deeper part of
the
hollow earth.
Yeah. It's a deeper part and they don't know where this signal's coming from, but that Iwi girl can sense it. And she keeps having these weird nightmares and dreams and things and coloring things. And just, she's like, she sees something.
Yep. And then they had a monarch station down in Hollow Earth and it got attacked, mm-hmm. and they found a huge blood handprint on the side of a mountain that looked like Kong's handprint, but it wasn't Kong. Mm-hmm. And they realized they weren't alone.
And Kong gets attacked. He gets attacked by a few of them and then follows this little, remember he catches that little one.
Yeah, baby.
A little baby Kong type thing and makes this thing take him, and it takes him to this underground place where there's this, basically this evil Kong. They called him Scar King or something like that. And there's this whole race of other Kong-like apes, basically a whole evil ape nation, but they're run by this Scar King thing, but he has this shard that controls one of the other Titans. It's like a crystal shard. Somehow he's controlling it with pain, they say, and he just would point this thing at it and it would do his bidding. It was bigger than Godzilla, but it could shoot this freezing breath or.
Yeah. But leading up to that though, is like, Kong goes deeper into Hollow Earth and disappears, and the Monarch team loses him. So they go try to find him, and then they find this lost tribe of Iwi people, and then they tell them the history. And then that's when they tell them that the whole story, and that they show them these cave drawings, and that once upon a time, there was this
ape people,
and they kept the peace. And there was this ancient rivalry of reptilian people and against the reptilian people and the ape people. And they pushed the reptilian people into the ground. But then there was a divide in the ape people. And it's like the rebellion in heaven. A third of the angels swept away. A third of the ape people broke away. And the third of the ape people was led in rebellion by this Scar King. They wanted to enslave the human race. And they tried to take over Earth and enslave the human race. And the good apes, Kong's people, battled them. And defeated them and pushed them deep into Tartarus. And it showed like flames and lava. So it's like they pushed them into like the magma part of Hollow Earth and then collapsed the chambers and imprisoned them like in hell. It's like the imagery it showed. So that thought that was
And they said blatant. That Scar King always wanted to get back to the surface.
Yes.
Like that was his drive. That was his goal. Yeah. Yeah. That's, and the crazy part is she's reading these hieroglyphs supposedly, but it's just pictures on a wall, and somehow this lady can read a language that she doesn't know at all. It's you know.
Well, it's the Iwis. The Iwis were.
Well, she. I thought she was reading it. Oh, I didn't know that they were translated. I don't know. She just.
Yeah, the Iwi people were. They don't speak.
Oh, it was telepathy.
They were telepathy to the deaf girl, and the deaf girl was sign language in it to the scientist
so,
lady.
They go through and they all that stuff about the Ape King getting back. But what is interesting is where they are, where these Iwi people are, they find that it's a temple complex, right? So we see that once again, we're deifying one of these creatures. At this point, it's the temple of Mothra, mm-hmm. but it's just a interesting we see kind of that play, because we can go back through history and look at all the different
gods. It showed them building these megalithic structures, yes, by lifting these megalith stones by the anti-gravity effect.
Forbidden knowledge. That is exactly what I was getting to. That whole point is that they're following after these gods that have taught them some type of forbidden knowledge, and they use that. They use that later on to kind of even the playing field when they're going through and battling. But the but watching them lift those stones and stuff, I just was sitting there going, "Oh my gosh, that's ridiculous! It's unreal," because it is so much that exact, the whole forbidden knowledge thing, that play on First Enoch, things of that nature. But this is where things kind of changed in the way that you're looking, the way that I saw this, because these Iwi people had this prophecy that an Iwi girl was going to come, and she was going to be able to release. She was the only one that could wake Mothra up, right? And they, I mean, really, the movie, it skipped into that right there. There was no hesitation. She went up this thing, and boom, it was there. But at this point, we see they have the battles, you know, the battles coming to fruition. We're seeing all these apes know where they are. They're coming to get them. They bring Godzilla down. Basically, they draw him down there. So, and I know I'm skipping over parts of the movie, but they bring Godzilla down there. You have Godzilla, Kong, and then Mothra. And these three, this trinity of these three, are fighting this evil ape, this other Titan, and the way that it's working and the way that it comes across is you kind of have, and you could look at it a couple ways, but you kind of have like Godzilla, the king, you have the father, you have, is what I'm saying. And I'm not saying, I want everybody to know, this is not a blasphemous thing I'm saying. That's not my goal. Yeah. It's a perversion of it, but we have Godzilla basically playing God the Father, we have Kong playing God the Son, and you have Mothra basically playing the Holy Spirit.
Yeah.
And I see it that way, which, you know, they were fighting in the beginning. Now they're all working together for these people, the saviors for these people. We see them working as one for these people. They're three separate things, but they're all fighting as one for this Iwi tribe, basically for all of Earth. Mm-hmm. But you see different things, like the Mothra comes and saves the ship from coming down, and
oh, and they transverse all three realms as they're fighting.
Yes. Yes.
Because they teleport through Tartarus, Middle Earth, and Earth. I never made that connection until you were saying it.
But it's
they go through all three realms as they're doing it.
It's just such a unique perspective on, like I said, it's different. Like I said, the last one, the King of the Monsters, was very straightforward to me. That was like a biblical layout of that battle, where this, it's like they change it and it becomes a new story halfway through.
Too. So it's like a trinity of trinities, because it's time, space, matter at the same time. Yes. It's a trinity of trinities.
Trinity of trinities. That's a lot of trinities.
You just hurt my head a little bit.
I only believe in the one of them, but you know, I don't know. In the end, like I said, you see those three. Obviously, the three of them, Mothra, Godzilla, and Kong, obviously come out on top. But it's just that. It's that same play. You see that supernatural element, the good versus evil, but you see so many plays on that supernatural realm, that seeing Tartarus, being held in Tartarus, waiting, you know, trying to get out, and guess what? They finally do.
Revenge and to take over humanity.
Yes. Yes. And he gets out. I mean, the main Scar King gets out to Earth, to the main actual Earth, the surface. There you go. That's what I was looking for. But he gets out. I mean, so you see this all the way through, and yet the Trinity at the end is obviously victorious. However, when this really does happen at the end of time, God will not have this much trouble.
And I see a recreation of the Enuma Elish leading up to this, because Godzilla is not strong enough to take on this king of Tartarus by himself and this Titan by himself. He has to do all these things to supercharge himself. Mm-hmm. He has to go all these different nuclear sites and supercharge himself like he did in those other movies to glow a different color. And one of these things he has to do, which I thought was really wild, it said when they were tracking him, they're like, oh my God, he's heading for Tiamat. Mm-hmm. And then someone was like, what? Why would he do that? And they're like, Tiamat's one of the most supercharged Titans. He went to like a nuclear power plant or something.
Okay.
But in this one, he goes to Tiamat, and it said that she was one of the most supercharged Titans. And then also, too, she was at the Arctic Circle or something, and that her lair was
something radioactive.
Yeah, some kind of radioactive place. But what I thought was crazy, in my notes I got, it says, meanwhile, Godzilla is seeking more power, and he's heading for Tiamat. And I said, according to the Enuma Elish, she is the mother of all monsters, primordial chaos. Him killing her would be a reenactment of the Enuma Elish, overtaken by her offspring, making Godzilla Marduk. They refer to her as Titan 19. Her territory is charged by electromagnetic winds and solar flares, the largest stockpile of energy on Earth. The scientists say if Zilla takes out her, he would supercharge. And she is in the Arctic. So I thought that was, you know, worth mentioning, because if she is the mother of all monsters, then that would make Godzilla her son. And according to the Enuma Elish, Tiamat, I mean, she is the mother of all monsters, so that would make Godzilla, in that context, Marduk. And Marduk does go and kill Tiamat and bust her into pieces. So that was basically that movie took that creation epic and retold it in the movie.
I don't know. There's so many things that you can take from these, and I know we've just scratched the surface, but we've sat here and talked about this for an hour and 40 minutes, hour and 30. I don't know how long it's been. It's been a while, but we've gone through these and literally scraped the surface of each movie. There's so much more that you could pull from all this. There's so much more.
Just the names alone, you know?
You went through, and they're pulling the names of these ancient gods. From these different epics, from the different pantheons, they're pulling these ancient names and just using them.
Bowing alone, and like the stuff that you pulled.
But it is a interesting thing to look at, and I think it gives us. So we all have to kind of lift that veil from our eyes when the things that we're watching, we're seeing, so that we see these this different context that's being given to us. Subconsciously, that's kind of indoctrinating us in these things. And yeah, it's meant for entertainment at once, but I'm sorry, anything you take in becomes part of you. It just is. That's anything you take in. So, I'd say this is that anything you watch, anything you see, if you watch through, especially Hollywood style movies, you will see supernatural elements in a lot of these things. You will see, there's always, and I mean, if you look at anything, there's always a good versus evil. There's always a play on that, right? There's always something, but a lot of times the, you know, just like the, ancient, like, Sumerian, Babylonian, things like the Apkallu, right? Things like the Anunnaki, like things like Prometheus, right? These things were held from you, but we've come to help. those end up being the good guys in a lot of these movies. A lot of these things, we see the what we know to be something demonic, but we get a positive view on these things. And we see it all the time. I mean, it's right there in front of us. So,
as always, keep digging.
Thanks for listening to the Dig Bible Podcast, the place where you can't lean on a shovel and pray for a hole. You gotta dig. Be sure to check us out on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook. Be sure to like, comment, share, and subscribe. Keep digging.